Welcome to The Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and definitely a horn dog. I have been called that two or three times in my time, if not more. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I'm just tired. I'm too tired to come up with anything else for here. I'm just... This is my sexual orientation, my identity, my relationship style. I'm just tired.
Yeah, we both had exhausting weeks. You were working and you were at Pride, and I was moving and then got really sick. So, two very different weeks in the lives of the Dildorks, but we made it through. It's all good. Yeah. So, we're talking today about initiating sex, which I was thinking about today because I was thinking I'm not very good at it, which might be part of the reason that I'm a bottom and a submissive, because a lot of times I don't have to be good at it, though not always, which we will discuss later. But tell me, are you usually the one who initiates sex when you have it?
I don't know. I mean, I would say... probably not. I'm trying to think, like, overarching. Like, I'm thinking of each specific relationship, and I'm like, do I initiate there? Do I... So I'm, like, trying to see themes.
Zoom out.
Also haven't had sex in, like, 7 months, so. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think it tends to be pretty even. The only times I'm thinking back and, like, noticing are times when it was... very intensely in one direction or another. But a lot of, like, my happiest sexual dynamics, it was somewhat even, and in most of them, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. It's really hard to say when you're, like, subby and bottomy, like, what really counts as initiating sometimes, because, like, I know which sort of, like, phrases and behaviors can incite the dominance that I have had into initiating, like, being deferent and calling them their honorifics, and, like, rubbing myself against them in various ways and stuff like that, where it's, like, arguably that is initiating, but... it's
yeah,
very
I mean, I would
indirect.
Consider that initiating.
Yeah, it's just like, it doesn't feel to me as active as, like, the ways that my partners tend to initiate sex, which is, like, starting to kiss me or, like, starting to touch me with their actual hands or, in some cases, saying, like, I want to fuck you. Like, you know, I am almost never that overt. Although I do think I was more aggressive about it when I was going on a lot of, like, Tinder hookups, because I think a lot of those dudes were really nervous about consent, and so they would wait for me to make a move, and so I had to develop mm-hmm. that skill, and usually it would be like, I really want to kiss you right now, or like, we should cuddle, and then escalate from there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I would say all those behaviors you're talking about are very much... initiating. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's how a lot of people initiate sex, more or less.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, I think, like, broadly speaking, there are basically, like, two groups of initiation methods, and there's, like, the more indirect and the more direct. And, like, a lot of people think that the more direct way is sort of, like, unromantic. But I actually think, like, especially in long-term relationships, when, like, there is more honesty and openness typically. Like, I think that it can be really nice to just be like, I want to fuck you. Although, like, especially if you or your partner have responsive desire, like, that might not be enough to get people to actually want to fuck. Like, you still have to do more stuff after that, usually.
Yeah. I mean, I think, interestingly, what this kind of comes down to is... where the line of starting sex is.
Interesting.
Right? Because what you're saying is you feel like they initiate because they kiss you after mm-hmm. you were doing all these things that initiate dominance and kind of grinding up against them and whatever, and you're like, oh, but they kiss.
Right.
And, like, I think it's where that tipping point is, because for me, I'm like, but all that stuff was initiating that you were doing.
Yeah.
Because I, like, if I was in a similar position, for me, like, kissing or touching someone or whatever would be responding to their initiation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that in you, that you're reading that as initiating, and I'm curious how many interactions happen where people are like, oh, but they made it finally sex. Like, we were just aggressively flirting at each other for a really long time, and then, and I'm curious how often someone would, like, a couple would agree on who initiated a specific encounter.
I actually think that's kind of nice, though, because I always think, like, the most magical initiations to me are the ones where you kind of forget how it began and who started it. And, like, if I can distinctly remember who specifically initiated our last several encounters, like, that relationship might not be going so well because, like, either I'm, like, resentful of them for not initiating or, like, I have not felt like I'm super actively contributing to that process. And so, like, if it's not really clear who's initiating, that to me feels more balanced and more kind of organic in a way.
Yeah, because I feel like for me, a lot of the sex I have, if it's not necessarily like pickup play or a first time with someone, is much more an organic culmination of flirting throughout the day. And, like, I'm responding to something they did a minute ago or something they did, like, an hour ago or whatever, and we're kind of, like, bantering and they're getting closer together and escalating, and eventually people are naked, and you're like, oh, well, here we are.
Yeah, I think I'm great at, like, what I might call a pre-initiation, which is, like, say that we're out on a drink date or something, and I'm like, later, I want you to do XYZ to me. But then, like, later, when later happens and we're actually in a bed or whatever, I'm not always so great at kind of pulling the trigger on the physical initiation of that because I'm very shy. But I think that there is something to be said for sort of, like, setting the stage and, like, giving preemptive consent for certain things because it makes people feel open to initiating if they might have been scared otherwise.
Yeah, and I think what you're subconsciously communicating there is balls in your court, I'm down. Or, even a little more deliberately, like, because you couch it in whatever flirty thing, but it's like, great, your move.
Yeah. Do you have any, signature tricks for initiating sex or any, like, lines that you like or anything like that?
Trying to think. The first thing that came to mind that I do a lot at, like, conferences and kink events and everything, is I'll be talking to someone and they'll mention something that I'm into. Because when you're at a kink event, like, you start talking about your kinks or things you do or whatever. And, like, you know, someone will be like, oh, I'm really sadistic and, you know, I've been wanting to suspend someone lately and haven't found someone or whatever. And I'll, like, sidle up real close and just be like, hey, we should talk. We should talk more about that. You should find me and we should talk about that.
Yeah, that's good. I think that you're more direct in your approach than I am, which I admire.
But it's still because in most of these situations I am, and I'm sure we'll talk more about kink a little bit more later, but in most of these situations I am generally gonna be the subby person.
Yeah.
So again, it is like kind of putting the ball in their court of like, yes, I'd really like to talk to you about this. And if you're interested, come back and find me. And I think it does similarly to what you were talking about like that pre-initiation in that it's a little less scary because you're not like, you want to do a thing right now.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to think about a thing and like, maybe the two of us can kind of like make something happen a little later.
Yeah, that's good. I think if I have a signature initiation move, it's definitely, like, rubbing my butt against the person's genitals, which is, I like that because, like, if they're not down, they can kind of just, like, make it into more aggressive cuddling or something. Like, it can just transition into additional cuddling. It doesn't have to turn into sex, but I think it also communicates relatively clearly that I am down for sex, so it's good.
Yeah. I do like the context you gave for that, which is just that you rub your butt on people. Not, like, while cuddling.
Yeah, I guess I should have specified that. I'm just not just, like, a rogue casually butt rubber. Yeah.
Just, like, when I feel like I want to have sex with someone, I just rub my butt on their junk.
No, so my favorite time for this move is actually in the morning, like, especially if I have mm-hmm. woken up before the person, because then I can kind of wake them up with my ass on their bits, which is, if they consent to morning sex, a very nice way to wake up. And absolutely. I love morning sex, so that's fun for me.
Yeah.
I also think I'm very much a fan of the phrasing of, like, I really want to do XYZ thing, which we've talked about lots of times before, and I like it for similar reasons as what you were describing earlier, where, like, it communicates my intent, but it also puts the ball in their court without being too pressury. So, like, mm-hmm. I really want to kiss you, I really want to cuddle with you, like, start small with one of these, like, lower pressure things, and then you can kind of escalate to more sexy things as you go on.
Yeah. I think one of the things also, kind of with the butt wiggle thing, stepping back from that a little bit, is just proximity. Mm-hmm. And, like, the way you stand near someone, there is, like, a tipping point in personal space, I think. Mm-hmm. That, like, when I'm down to fuck someone, especially someone that I play with regularly, I start standing a lot closer to them. Uh-huh. I'm just like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Notice I'm right here.
Yeah, that's good. I also, I mean, this is probably more so for sexting or phone sex than in-person sex, but sometimes I will just allude to feeling turned on or that I've been having a particular fantasy lately or been craving a particular sexual act lately. And that, again, is something where, like, if they're not into it at that particular moment or at all, they can just swerve that conversation right away from that. But if they are into it, then they can be like, oh, yeah, tell me more about that. And then we can escalate to the sexy things.
Yeah, that's, like, kind of the sexting softball. I think that's the sexting equivalent of the butt wiggle.
Yes.
Of the, like, you can interpret this sexually or affectionately.
Yeah.
Your call.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, it works in person, too, sometimes. Like, the example I'm thinking of is, like, sometimes when I'm on my period, I'll be really turned on, and I'll also know that, like, having an orgasm would help with cramps. And so sometimes I'll say, like, wow, like, my cramps are really bad, really need an orgasm, or something like that, where it's, like, I'm more so complaining than I am requesting something from them. But if they want to choose to take that complaint as an invitation, then they can, but they also don't have to. It's nice.
Yeah. I'll, sometimes if I'm, like, nervous about something, whether it's the person or the situation, or if, because sometimes, like, sometimes when I initiate, I'm like, I'm trying to fuck. And sometimes when I initiate, I'm like, you know, sex might be fun right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'll say something like, you know, part of me really wants to make out with you right now, and part of me really wants to see the end of this movie, because I'm also, like, real comfy. So,
yeah.
And I love giving people options like that to let them kind of make the call for what they're down for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk to you about how you like people to initiate with you. And I also want to say, like, I think that this stuff depends a lot on spontaneous versus responsive desire, which we've been talking about a lot lately. It's Emily Nagoski developed, or she talks about this division in types of sexual desire. Because I think, like, I am someone with responsive desire who has dated a lot of spontaneous desire people. And so I am used to partners initiating through, like, slow escalation of touch and, like, kissing and dirty talk and, like, very gradual things. But, like, with the types of partners I've had, I could literally just be like, hey, I really want to blow you right now, what would you feel about that? And they often will say yes, and it's like, I'll do a little bit of, like, quote-unquote foreplay, like, I won't just jump to shoving their dick down my throat, but that tends to work. Whereas, like, for me, that wouldn't really work if someone was like, hey, can I go get down on you right now? Like, I would be like, okay, but, like, I'm not turned on, so
I mean, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the person, because there are definitely people who will just dive down there and get my clit in their mouth immediately, and I'm like, that's just not going to feel good for me. But if there's someone who I know is going to, like, take their time with it, then that's fine. But how do you prefer to for people to initiate sex with you?
I think I just like people to initiate sex with me.
Okay, you're easy.
That's general. Yeah, thanks. I am. This is true. I am.
Yeah.
I really like the gradual escalation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives me, like, a gradual escalation of touch. But I do like to start with, like, cuddling, hugging, sitting, like, just touching enough while we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I'm, because, again, a lot of my play happens, like, publicly at, like, kink events and stuff. So a lot of my negotiation stuff is my initiation, is the way people initiate.
Mm-hmm.
Is, like, we'll talk about playing and be like, okay, and is sexy stuff on the table, too? Is that also how we're gonna play?
Mm-hmm.
And during that, I like to have, like, enough touch to feel comfortable and to know that, like, oh, this is, like, going somewhere. This is a person that's comfortable touching and being close to my body.
Mm-hmm.
While also giving me time to kind of warm up to that touch. 'Cause I've noticed I get a little more antsy being touched lately than I do in general. And I think it's just, like, weird body feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I also really prefer an escalation of touch, both for, like, responsive desire reasons and also because it's, like, less presumptuous than someone just, like, grabbing your bits. Like, even if someone previously has the consent to grab my bits, like, I'm not really going to be too into that. That's just sort of, like, artless, unless it's in a very specific, like, DS dynamic kind of way. But I like kissing and then, like, neck kisses and chest kisses and, you know, just escalating touch like that, because that gives my body time to get into it. Because sometimes asked point blank, do you want to fuck right now? I won't. I'll be like, I might in 15 minutes of you doing stuff to me, but, like, right now, not so much.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you had, like, deliberate types of touch, and me, I'm just, like, hug me for a while. but I think for me, it's less a matter of building arousal and more a matter of building, like, comfort with this person and in this space. I'm curious, though, if... Because I think a gradual escalation in touch is pretty standard. Like, a lot of people are gonna want that.
Yeah.
I'm curious if there are secondary senses that people can, like, tap into if they want to trigger your responsive desire without touching you.
Oh, yeah. Like, dirty talk is huge for me. Like, I really enjoy being out on a date with someone and them whispering to me what they want to do to me later. And this is particularly exciting for me when they, like, actually follow through on the things they say. Because I've often had people be like, I'm going to, like, throw you up against a wall and fuck you from behind and stuff. And then they, like, don't actually do it. And so, like, it's very nice for me when they actually follow through. But, yeah, I'm very, like, auditory in the way that I respond to stimulus. And so, like, dirty talk really helps. Like, texting earlier in the day really helps. A little bit of, like, touch can help. Like, you can do that on a date, too. Like, some touching of, like, thighs under the table or whatever. Those both are good for me. For me, like, visuals are not big, which, like, we've discussed fairly recently when we talked about sight. Like, that's really not going to do too much for me. Scent is good, which is part of why I agree with you that cuddling can be a really good precursor to sex, because then I'm just like, oh yeah, I remember smelling that when your chest was pressed against me while you were fucking me, so, like, now my arousal is starting to build, so that's good. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I think so. I would have said dirty talk, like, first thing a while ago, and thinking more about who I am like, my attraction patterns, that works, I think, only if I have, like, an established dynamic with someone.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm realizing that without, like, touch has to be the beginning of my attraction to pretty much everyone I've been into. And I don't, like, so I think it has to be a pretty core component. Unless this is someone that I, like, again, have, like, touched and talked to and spent a lot of time in close proximity to, and then later I'm talking to them in that way. But, like, I know a lot of people will like dirty talk with, you know, long distance people or strangers on the internet or whatever, which like seems like it should be my shit. And I just can't ever make myself care without that like initial proximity. And there are some really hot people on the internet.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I feel that same way. And I think like a lot of it is like my particular style of submission is very much tied into wanting to impress people. And I don't want to impress people if I don't really know them or care about them. So yeah, that's important for me. I also think on the topic of touch, like massage is a fairly cliche, like foreplay suggestion. But for me, one of the reasons that it's helpful is if my head is full of all the stresses of the day and my body is all tense from the day, like I'm just not really going to be able to relax into arousal like nearly as easily. So melting that stuff away a little bit can really help like pave the way for better sex.
I had like one massage once. And it ended in sex. So now my brain's like, this is how massages happen.
Yeah. And the nice thing, too, is that there are ways to achieve that effect, that relaxing effect of a massage, but without giving a massage. And, like, for example, like, my partner and I were long distance, so, like, we'll often talk on the phone and deconstruct what happened during our days, and he'll tell me, like, all the ways that I am doing a good job and am safe and, like, nothing that I'm worried about is, like, as bad as it seems. So that sort of relaxes me in a similar way to being massaged. So like, yeah, there are lots of ways to come at it.
Yeah. But I think having that like soothing moment to get out of your day can be really, really helpful.
Yeah. Especially if you have depression or anxiety or a stressful job, like anything like that, you know?
Yeah. So do you have any particular like initiation horror stories that you wanted to share?
I mean, nothing traumatic. I'm lucky in that way. But,
yeah, well, I mean, if it's traumatic, I don't think it's initiating sex. It's something else entirely.
Right, exactly, yeah. I think all of mine that I would consider bad are ones that were just sort of jumping from 0 to 100, because as I've said multiple times, that doesn't work for me. I've had people, like, grab my bits out of nowhere. I've had people start spanking me really hard out of nowhere. Like, I love being spanked, but I need to be at least a little bit turned on to enjoy that in a sexual way beforehand. And it just kind of always feels to me like someone's rushing through the motions and, like, isn't really fucking me as a person so much as, like, fucking in general. And they're just trying to, like, get through it. And that's not fun or hot for me.
Yeah. It's like they're trying to, like, enter the cheat code to get sex. And they're right. Like, this is what I do, right?
Yeah.
This is how I start this.
Yeah, and, like, I don't like to be sappy or romantic about sex, really, but, like, it is a way that you can experience intimacy, and it can be an emotional experience, and so, like, I don't want to skip that stuff. Like, I don't know, even in a casual hookup, like, there for me is some emotional element or some intimacy element, and I don't want to just, like, blow through that, so to speak. Like, that's not fun for me.
Yeah, well, and I think that's what that, like, cuddly discussion for me is at the beginning, is just, like, finding that equilibrium being in proximity with them and just understanding, like, how our bodies exist in the same space together. And just jumping for someone's bits, like, completely skips over that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've also had, this is exclusively a thing cis dudes do, I think. I've had cis dudes, like, reach into my underwear and say, oh, you're so wet, and take that as an invitation to go further, as in I'm already turned on from, you know, the 2 seconds of cuddling we've been doing. And it's like, dude, that's discharge for sure. Like,
that's fully what a vagina feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I've just been walking around for a day possessing a vagina. That's what that is. Sorry, no dice.
You ever have one of those days where you just get home and, like, look in your underwear and you're like, I was not this turned on all day. How did this happen?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, vaginas are mysterious. This is another thing I've learned from Emily Nagoski, is, like, arousal non-concordance. And I think, to speak broadly, I think most people would prefer more, quote-unquote, foreplay rather than less. I'm using scare quotes for foreplay because it's kind of a made-up concept. You can have an entire sex session that's all things that some people would consider foreplay. But I think generally most people would rather have some foreplay than none.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely one of those people.
No foreplay is, like, a very specific mood that is hot when it's what you're going for.
But counterpoint, I think, like, the only times when I've enjoyed sex that could be said to have no foreplay, there was some kind of foreplay, even if it was just mental, right? Like,
yeah.
It was something.
Yeah, definitely. But that, like, very deliberate, although, like, I could even do, like, somewhat blindsided, like, a dominant comes home from work and is like, sorry, I need to use you right now.
Yeah.
Like, I could get into that, and, like, there would be those few minutes of me not being super turned on, but that would almost, like, add to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the way Melina talks about always being available for her partner, and how it turns her on to be used when she's not turned on.
Yeah, I think for me, interestingly, like, when that type of scene is actually happening, I am not turned on. I am not, like, even especially into it. But afterward, the memory of that is very hot to me. And I can use it to, like, if my partner's, like, dirty talking to me about a scene previously that was like that, then that can be really good.
Yeah.
It's like sexception.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes for me, it, like, I'm able to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of thing, like, that's something deliberate. You chose not to do, like, this warm-up thing because you were going for a specific mood.
Yeah.
And, like, that is a conscientious thing you can do to play with kink, or, like, you can be flirting and, like, have a quickie and, like, just quick pull down your pants in, like, a closet somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that can be hot because, oh, we didn't have time to, like, do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But much more prevalent is, I think, foregoing this, again, scare quotes, foreplay, out of, like, either they don't think it's important, or they just, misogyny, you know.
I think that this points out further that consent and arousal are two different and separate things, and you can't treat them as synonymous. Like, you can't assume someone who is physically aroused is consenting, but by the same token, you can't assume that just because someone isn't physically aroused that they're not consenting. Like, you, as you were just saying, you can consent to a thing that you're not turned on for. The important thing is getting that consent. So here's a question. If there is an imbalance in frequency of initiation, like, if one partner is doing it most or all of the time, do you think that that's necessarily a red flag?
No. I think it's a red flag if one partner in the relationship is going, ugh, I always, or ugh, they always.
Mm-hmm.
If a person in a relationship is, like, talking to me about it and is raising it as, like, a thing, then yes, it's a red flag. But if I go, hey, who initiates, and they go, oh, shit, I think they always do. That's just kind of how we do this. Then
yeah.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, I agree. It reminds me of that Tristan Taramina quote about how equality is not always the same thing as symmetry. I think about that so much. I'm subby and bottomy. My partners are often the ones initiating, and it tends to be how we both like it. It's very rarely been an issue for me that was brought up. I think, though, like, if you're the person who never initiates, even if that's, like, working well for you, it might behoove you to think about why that is and how you can change that, like, just kind of as an experiment, because it is fun to have that in your tool belt, because it gives you a sense of confidence and agency, like, especially if it's not something you're used to doing. And switching roles, even in this sort of small way, can really sort of broaden the scope of your relationship in a fun way.
Yeah, they do, because it does somewhat, I mean, sex does a lot of things for a lot of people, but for me, initiating kind of gets you feeling simultaneously powerful and sexy, because there's this, like, seductive quality to it, right? That, like, and it's satisfying. You like kind of lob the softball out there and get to see it come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really validating and affirming. But in the same way, it can be that way to be receptive of someone's initiation too, in a slightly different energy.
Yeah.
And to be able to kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm just being switchy right now, and talking about all of my switchy energy, but to be able to kind of inhabit those different spaces and feel sexy in different ways.
Yeah.
Is really fun. Cause I think also we've talked about this in role playing, but when you're initiating in this, like, moment of starting sex is a fun way to like try on different roles too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does the Jessica Rabbit seductress kind of initiate versus, you know, how does the, you know, coy brat initiate or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like even if you're submissive, it can feel really powerful to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that though is like, as much as it can be powerful and fun to initiate sex, like if you're like chronically getting rejected or ignored when you do that, like it can really diminish your confidence in doing it, which is very hard because like sometimes your partner might be saying no, not because they don't desire you, but just because like maybe they're going through a tough period in their life. Maybe things are stressful. Maybe something's up with their body. So it's not about you necessarily, but like it's easy to like take a hit to your ego when that's a thing that keeps happening. I know that we've both been through this in past relationships. Do you have any advice for this particular situation?
I think, so first of all, you want to raise it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to have the conversation is the first thing. Because you may think you're initiating and they may have no idea. Like, I've talked to so many people who are like, yeah, I've been initiating for weeks, and their partner's like, you just looked at me! I didn't know what that... Like, you looked in my general direction while walking towards the bedroom. I don't know. Like, I thought you were going to bed. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, like, there is a lot of nonverbal subtextual stuff that happens when it comes to initiation. I mean, the whole way we just talked about it, we're like, well, like, sometimes, I stand a little bit closer so that, or, like, you know, I wiggle my butt a little bit. And it's very, like, ephemeral.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're feeling like it's really lopsided and you're feeling either underappreciated or whatever, just raising that and being like, hey, I feel like I've been initiating a lot and, you know, whatever. And having that conversation and making it explicit can be really helpful. And talking about what is it that you're looking to get out of this person initiating, right? Is it that you're not feeling sexy? Is that you're not feeling loved or appreciated?
Mm-hmm.
Is it you're feeling forgotten? And kind of communicating why it's valuable for you, for them to be able to express this. And again, I'm speaking as someone who was very clearly on the other side of things, who was initiating a lot and did not, and the other person did not.
Mm-hmm.
But it can go the other way as well. You could talk about, like, feeling like, oh, I feel like you initiate a lot and I'd like some more flexibility, maybe back off for a minute and give me some time to like come to you next time I'm into you.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of talk about what you're looking to get from that and how you want to communicate those things to find an equilibrium that works for you, because it doesn't necessarily have to be 50-50.
Yeah. I think it's important and great that you pointed out there that they may not even know that you're initiating. And, like, I've dated people on the autism spectrum who, like, weren't great with, like, reading hints. And so, like, you might have to be more direct. Like, even if they're not on the spectrum, like, there are less people who just, like, don't communicate or receive communication well that way. And so it might be useful to have, like, a, like, really, like, meta sort of conversation about, like, how would you prefer that I initiate sex? Like, what would be clear enough and also fun for you? And come up with, like, a few different ones, because you don't want to have just one, because that's not really fun. I also think, like, Maybe if you're the partner who keeps initiating, it might be worth it to discuss with your partner, like, what they can do to soften that in the moment when they're saying no to you. Like, not that they're necessarily obligated to, but if they maybe want to pivot to some cuddling, or if they maybe want to offer you a sexual middle ground, like, they'll cuddle you while you jerk off, or depends on what you're looking to get out of sex, because for some people it's an orgasm, for some people it's intimacy. It could be different things on different days. But it's nice if they can, like, do a redirect in some way and offer you something that might be, like, a compromise.
And also, if you're trying to help someone be more comfortable initiating more, you can kind of do some of those, like, pre-initiations or soft things that we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And discuss it, right? Be like, okay, when I wear, you know, these pajamas to bed, that means I'm down if you wanted to initiate, and I'll probably say yes. So that you take out all this anxiety, right, of, like, now you've talked about it. They know what this means, and this is their opportunity to give it a shot and try it out.
Yeah.
And you can still feel a little bit pursued, right? Because maybe you wear those pajamas to bed 3 days a week, and once you have sex, like, but it's like when you leave the door open in the play space as the sign that people can come in.
Yeah.
Which I realize is a slightly more advanced sexual metaphor that I'm using to explain a very simplistic thing that everyone accesses. I'm like, yeah, like, you know when you're at an orgy?
Of course.
Like that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would add...
Doesn't that make it easier to understand?
I would add, if you're trying to encourage your partner to initiate more, it's a really good thing to give them positive reinforcement when they do. Mm-hmm. So after the sex, later on when you're talking, you can be like, that was so hot when you did that. It turned me on so much. Like, really lay it on thick, because they might not be initiating because they're not confident about it, or they're not sure how you'll respond. So if you show them that you will respond well, which doesn't necessarily mean always consenting, and wanting to continue with it, but you will at least respond well and, like, kindly to them doing it, like, then it's going to get easier for them to do it more often.
Right. And what about if you're not down? What if this is a partner that, like an ongoing partner, and this time you're not down? Sometimes that's even harder than, like, saying no to a new partner.
Yeah, I think two elements of this response are very important. One of them, sort of optional, but offering up a reason or an explanation. Obviously, you can consent for any reason you want or no reason at all. Or, sorry, you can not consent for any reason or no reason.
You can also consent. Well, you can consent for most reasons.
Yeah. But so I think if you're trying to soften the blow of a no, it can be nice to explain if there is an explanation, like, I'm really stressed out, my body's sore today, whatever it is. And if you're the partner receiving that explanation, don't, like, push back on it and be shitty. Don't be like, oh, your body's sore, I'll give you a massage until it's not. Like, you can, like, offer that, but don't act like it's a solution that's going to fix everything and, like, push through their soft no, because that's not cool. And then the second thing is, I think it's nice to offer, as I was saying, some kind of alternate plan. Like, no, I don't want to fuck right now, but, like, how would you feel about cuddling and watching a movie? Or, like, no, I don't want to have PIV, but, like, can I give you a hand job? Or, you know, whatever it is.
I think also if you're the person receiving that and deciding you're not down in the moment, it can be helpful to, like, make a note and be like, all right, but next time, maybe they'll be a little bit more nervous about initiating, especially if this isn't something they do so super often. Mm-hmm. So, like, next time I'm feeling down, maybe I'll take that turn.
Yeah.
Because, again, it doesn't have to be 50-50, right? But if this is a new skill that someone's learning, and, you know, they were told no, even if they fully understand, they did the scary thing and didn't get the prize at the end. And sometimes that, like, little bit of encouragement again later can just be a thing to be conscientious of. And that's obviously in no way make you feel guilty and make you want to say yes. Like,
yes. Yeah. I think also this is a situation where it's good to cultivate a poker face, because a lot of times, like, if someone asks you for sex and you're not in the mood to have sex, like, my internal reaction is often to be like, ugh, like, really? Like, now?
Oh, God, no.
But of course I'm not going to express that externally, because that's awful, and I'm going to make someone feel really ashamed about their sexuality for a thing that is my problem and my issue, and, like, I should not be putting it on them, right? Like, so I want people to initiate sex with me, and, like, I shouldn't scare them off because, like, on one day I'm not really feeling it. So get good at, like, keeping a neutral face when you respond to that, because you really don't want to make them – like, I've definitely had partners who, when I would initiate sex, they would, like, literally roll their eyes, like, oh, here comes the horn dog again. Like, and that feels indescribably awful. So don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's terrible.
Yeah. Please never.
And a lot of people – do it, like, playfully.
Mm-hmm. That's still not cool.
And think it's, like, endearing teasing.
Yeah.
And initiating is a moment of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the process of initiating is basically presenting yourself up to another human being.
Yeah.
And saying, what do you think right now?
Yeah.
And that's fucking scary.
Yeah.
Like, we're generally, we try, as human beings, we try to partner with people who are good to us. Mm-hmm. And, like, generally that goes pretty well, but, like, it's a scary, vulnerable thing. And it's flattering.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases. Like, especially if this is someone you care about. So you can appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, have compassion for the, you know, what they're doing, and appreciate that it is, you know, flattering to be desired by someone who you're in a partnership with, mm-hmm. and also not want to do something about it right then.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a question about gender roles and how those affect initiation dynamics, and I think it's also worth pointing out that, like, in a binary gender system, like, both of those genders are saddled with certain types of sexual shame that might make initiation difficult. So, like, women are socialized to not be very sexual, and that if they are, then that's, like, kind of a red flag, or it makes them slutty or weird. And then, like, men are often told that their sexuality is, like, predatory or a weapon or it's creepy. And so, like, even if you no longer identify with that gender, like, you might still have internalized some of that socialization, and it's really shitty. And it's definitely something to be wary of and to be careful about when you're trying to kindly reject someone.
Yeah. And in addition to just those, like, moral weights that they put on things, like, technical skill sets that we give little boys and little girls are different.
Yeah.
For initiating anything and getting what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because people that are socialized as women get a lot of those seductive, more passive pre-initiation things, skills that we were kind of talking about, right? The thing that you do to get them to touch you, kiss you,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera. So those are a lot of the skills that I think people socialized as women will, like, fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
But it, which was interesting for me, especially in a place where I'm like, all right, I am firmly in the boy box, more or less, in my gender and the way I move in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a lot of more complicated ways about gender than that, but in the way I exist and move in the world with people, pretty much in the boy box. I have none of those skill sets.
Mm.
which, like, and, like, moving into dating is really interesting, because there are these, like, expectations and these things that we even somewhat subconsciously expect from other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very rarely is someone sitting there cuddling with you being like, and wait until her butt wiggles. Well, maybe your partner's, but, you know. But, like, that's not, it's a thing that you're like, oh, that happens, and this is kind of the next move. Like, it's all this stuff that's kind of ingrained culturally in how we
mm-hmm.
navigate and move through the world. Yeah. And there are all these little things around initiation and flirting that are gendered in ways that is not explicit and is really stressful, is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's just really stressful.
Yeah, I think it's important and nice to be cognizant of the gendered socialization that your partner or partners may have absorbed on this. An example that's coming to mind for me is I had a partner once who would repeatedly tell me that I was insatiable, and he meant it in like a compliment way. Like he was, he was saying that he liked that about me because he also had a high libido. But, that word has really negative connotations for me because I was raised as a woman and I was told over and over again that my sexual desire should basically not exist. And that it's weird if it's, on par with or higher than my partner's. And so as much as he was trying to compliment me, like I didn't receive it as such, and it made me want to initiate less. Like it made me really self-conscious, like, oh, am I insatiable? Like, is that bad? So
yeah,
think about this stuff before you say these things.
Yeah.
Okay, some listener questions. We've been sort of dancing around this one, but how do you initiate sex as a bottom or submissive? And sort of a companion to this question, a dominant was asking, are there ways that a dominant or top can help facilitate or make space for their partner's ability to initiate scenes or sex?
I mean, I think we talked a lot about this. I have a theory that as a submissive in negotiation and in play, it's your responsibility to kind of create the landscape, and then the dominant builds the game, or design the playground, and the dominant kind of exists within that space. So setting things up the way you've talked about, like hinting, oh, you know, I've been craving a lot of pain lately, or we've talked about raising new things with like, oh, I read this article, or oh, I saw this thing. You can do that similarly even with stuff that you know you're into, like, oh, I was talking to Kate about the spanking scene, and God, it made me miss it. I haven't done that in a while, or, you know, whatever. And setting up and giving them access and information about your desires, and allowing them to kind of build something within that. Although I will say, especially in the kink scene, like, just explicit discussion... an initiation around, like, hey, do you want a scene later?
Yeah.
Is, I think, a lot more common and acceptable.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's acceptable, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. I do think, like, as...
hey, wanna fuck.
Like, submissives, for submissives, it is particularly hard to do that sometimes. Like, even when you're not in role, it can be really hard. Maybe because you're shy and not confident with it, but maybe also because it actually turns you on more for someone to... initiate stuff, and like you're not really into it if they're not taking the reins. A tip that I learned from my dominant partner is that instead of being like, hey, I really want you to spank me later, or like, I really want to blow you or whatever, you can ask for it, phrase it as a request, and that keeps you in your roles, and that's nice. And also they can say no. Another fun thing could be you could lay out an implement that you want them to use on you later, and they might or might not, but, it's good for them to have that information that there's like a particular implement that you're craving. But I do think in general, like the pre-initiation thing is really useful for submissives, in particular because like a lot of dominants don't want to be, quote, topped from the bottom. Like they don't want to be directly told, I want you to do this thing to me right now. They may want to have like sort of a palette or a collection of options available to them so that they can decide which ones they're going to do and at what point. So if there's like a few things that you're craving, maybe you could set that up in advance via text and just let them know, or earlier in the evening or whatever, and then they can decide if they want to follow through with that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Also, if you happen to know something physically that your dominant finds very arousing or attractive, like a particular piece of clothing or way you do your makeup or your hair or a perfume or something like that, that can be like a subtle signal that you're down. And that can sort of incite their arousal in a way that can be really fun and hot. As for the question of how a dominant or top can facilitate their sub being more open with stuff like this, I think something that's been useful to me in my relationship is regular check-ins, where like every 2 weeks we sit down and we do a check-in, and one of the questions is like, what's something that you want to do together soon, which could be sexual or not? And another one of the questions is like, what are some fantasies that you're having lately? And that can be a place for the sub to raise things that they are interested in doing, and then the dom can use that information later, and that's nice. Okay, someone asked this, and this isn't really super relevant to this topic, but I thought it was funny. How can I find out before having sex if someone is circumcised or not?
You don't. You ask
if yeah.
it matters that much to you.
Yeah, you can ask.
Which I would invite you to examine why it matters that much yeah, to you. Yeah,
same. Well, okay.
Otherwise, surprise!
Right. I shouldn't actually make fun of this person because I do have my preferences vis-a-vis foreskin, but like not to the point where it's going to make me like turn someone down. But a technique I have found useful in the past is to find a way to mention foreskin in conversation or to mention circumcision and just kind of see how they react. And they may or may not disclose their own circumcision status, but that's probably the closest you're going to get to a polite and subtle way to ask them about that. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together we're the Dildorks. You can find us at TheDildorks.com or by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. You can also, while you're there, rate and review us. Brings us up in the charts, makes us easier to find. And if you want to support us even more, you can head to Patreon.com/TheDildorks to toss a couple of bucks our way and help us keep doing what we're doing and being great.
Thanks so much to Protodome. He did our theme song, I Want You in My Bedroom. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. She is at Starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Yeah. Also, if you're in an ongoing relationship, it can be helpful to kind of hang on. Dell Support Center will begin scanning your computer in 23 seconds. No, it will not. Most certainly will not do that. So, do you have any particularly like bad horror stories that as opposed to good horror stories? I have some great horror stories, actually.
I mean, you love horror stories, so yeah.
I love them so much.